You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, welcome to Locked On Heat, your semi-daily podcast on all things Miami Heat. We will go back to being a daily show closer to the start of the season. My name is Wes Goldberg, and I'm here with Dave Vermil. And from Sports Illustrated and apparent Dan Le Batard show fame, it's Rohan Nadkarni. And boy, your 30 seconds of fame ended fast. One hit on ESPN Radio, and now you're back with us.
This is where I belong, though. You know, I feel back in my comfort zone. I was flying too close to the sun with that radio hit. This is where I belong. I should have never left my cocoon, so I'm happy to be back.
That's right. That's right. We've got emails and tweets today. We're probably going to have to split this into two parts because we have so many. We've got questions about Bam Adebayo's ceiling, Miami's guard rotation this season, and a whole lot of other stuff. But let's start with this from Franco, who writes in, "The Heat are being overlooked by fans and media. Only Milwaukee and Philadelphia are better teams in the East. Switching out Jay Rich for Jimmy Butler, huge improvement. Internal growth from Winslow, Bam, DJJ, maybe even Hero improves as the season goes on. The addition by subtraction of Whiteside, 30-plus minutes of Bam nightly. Return to playing shape for Goran, Dion, and JJ. Our bench play will be a strength this season. Spoelstra is a top-5 coach in the league. Sorry, Franco, you're wrong, top-2 coach. He finds a way to maximize this roster. These reasons, plus what should be a more fluid offense due to Jimmy's gravitational pull, which will generate a lot more open looks than our players have had the past two seasons, that along with a guarantee of a top-7 defense. Barring any trades, I don't see Miami being on a different tier from Boston, Indiana, Brooklyn, or Toronto. If all breaks right, team chemistry, the young guys' development, healthy roster, then Miami will finish 3rd in the East." I'm just going to say this. He outlines a very, I wouldn't say compelling. Compelling seems too strong of a word.
Thorough
and lots of bullet points. There's just a lot of words here.
Was that even a question? Like, what was that? That was a monologue.
It's a screed.
That was Franco's podcast.
That was a manifesto.
Is he wrong, though? I think he does have the original point. I think is right. Milwaukee and Philadelphia, I think, are the only teams in the East that are head over heels better than Miami, only because if you look at Boston, I think Kemba Walker, all things considered, is probably an upgrade over Kyrie Irving. But yes, you lose Al Horford. You're losing a lot. I think you're expecting internal growth from Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, but who knows? Indiana was going to be without Victor Oladipo for a long time. Brooklyn has a giant Kevin Durant-shaped hole in their roster. And Toronto, I think Toronto's going to be good, but I don't know exactly what they're going to look like after Kawhi Leonard left. So the original point that Milwaukee and Philadelphia are the two top teams in the East, I think that's pretty clear. I think the Heat could be, if everything breaks right, to Franco's points here, as he lays out, maybe they could finish in the top 4.
It's not inconceivable. I definitely don't think it's impossible. I do think having Spo, someone like Spo there is going to help. I think Jimmy is going to help the rotation a lot. Like, he's exactly the kind of person they've been missing the last couple years. Like, forget just an alpha scorer. They've really needed a wing guy. Like, they haven't had someone who could play small forward for a long time.
We haven't talked to you since they added him, right? I don't think you've been on the show.
I don't think so. No, we have not. So
right.
I do think that third is a possibility. I just wouldn't try to enter this season with that level of expectation. I mean, it's going to take them some time. We all know I'm in the tank for Dion. I'm a big JJ fan, but, you know, those guys still have something to prove. And JJ especially, you know, is getting sneakily older. So I don't think it's as simple as thorough as that email was. I don't think it's as simple as it was laid out there. I do think they have the potential to be a top 4 team. Certainly, I will agree with the fact that, you know, it's Milwaukee, Philadelphia, and then kind of everyone else. And Boston's obviously going to take a step back. So there is a little bit of a gray area, some confusion there. But it's just not as simple as everything was laid out in that email.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't know how the rest of the Eastern Conference will shake up. I mean, as Wes pointed out, all those other teams do have questions and or holes that are going to be or have to be filled at some point during the season. I'm more curious about, like, you know, how the roster shapes up differently. Obviously there won't be any additional changes unless the trade for Chris Paul falls through. But at the same time, like, how do you envision the rotation shaking up? You mentioned that you think it's going to be a big addition to have Jimmy there. Do you have any ideas of how the starting lineup will be? Because I think it's a point of debate for me and Wes.
That's a great question. I really have no idea. I mean, knowing Spo, it's going to be a situation where I feel like he's going to do something stubborn at the beginning of the season before finally relenting. And by that, I mean, I don't know if we're going to see Justice at point guard right away. I think that's what we should see. And I think there is room to play Justice and Goran together. It's just a matter of making sure that Justice has the ball in his hands and he is the point guard. I do think that's important. I don't know. I mean, do you start Dion? Do you maybe bring Goran off the bench? I mean, I think there's a good argument to be made about bringing someone like Goran off the bench and starting maybe a little bit more traditionally with maybe KO and Bam in the front court or Bam and JJ, even though they always haven't played super well together. But, you know, it's that same problem we've had the last couple of years where they do have a lot of guards. They still have to sort that out. I don't know where they're going to go with the starting lineup. I do think Jimmy is going to be playing the three. I think that's pretty obvious. But frankly, there's a lot that can go from there.
Yeah, you would think that Justice could just handle the ball from, you know, quote-unquote small forward. You could still play Goran Dragic at quote-unquote point guard and still play Jimmy Butler at quote-unquote shooting guard just for the sake of having, you know, positional labels, because I guess that's still somewhat important. But just have Justice handle the ball a bunch. But it does also seem like Justice rises to the challenge of being labeled point guard. Like, of all people, he tends to play better when he is like, I'm the point guard. That I think that was really clear last season, especially last December when Goran Dragic was out with his injury, and they just played Justice a point guard. He was listed at point guard on the depth chart for them going into the games, and I think he really thrived there. And then Goran Dragic does play well off the ball. I think that that group works. I think it works, and I think they complement each other well. And then you add either Kelly Olynyk or James Johnson next to Bam Adebayo in the front court, and how much depth this team could have if everything breaks right. Just to go back to Franco's question here, or statement, or manifesto, as Roman put it, I wouldn't bet on the Heat being a top three or four team, but there are teams every year in the East that sort of jump up and take advantage of something of some kind, and I don't see a reason why Miami couldn't do it. I mean, maybe they do just break out of this malaise of mediocrity, and the Jimmy Butler thing really inspires them and puts them over the top. And like you said, they needed a guy like that just to play that position. And maybe, you know, Franco's point here of his gravitational pull actually does bear out, and all of a sudden everybody just rises up. Because I think David and I were talking about this all last season, how they just needed one guy, one head of the snake, to just rise everybody up, and now I guess they have that with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, that's a good point. I do think Jimmy kind of helps get everyone in the right roles, and that's kind of an underrated part about this team now, is I do think, you know, everyone can kind of play their part to a better degree than they were last year, where, you know, they really were just kind of at the end of the year kind of relying on Dwayne to do stuff at the end, you know, last couple minutes. So it's going to help to have Jimmy doing that, you know, for a full 48, quote unquote. So it'll be interesting. I need to take a look at the East once again and kind of figure out who's going to fall where and kind of how it really shaped up after the season. But I mean, I do think the Pacers are going to be good, especially if Oladipo comes back. We haven't talked about that much. You know, Toronto played well without Kawhi last year when he was getting load managed. You know, what if Siakam takes another step up? So there are some decent teams, but I do think the Heat are going to make a decent little leap here.
Yeah, I mean, well, there are other teams, too. I mean, the Pistons, the Magic. I mean, maybe we're not expecting much out of them.
I mean, Orlando had Miami's number last year.
Yeah, absolutely. The Bulls are another team that's improved, too. Now, I don't know that they're going to take that kind of astronomical leap, but a lot of fans maybe, and maybe some pundits as well, kind of see them as a playoff team. So there are plenty of teams there. It's going to be a lot deeper, a lot more hotly contested, I think, than it's been in a long time.
If you play fantasy football, you're going to want to make sure you listen to Vinny Iyer and the Locked On Fantasy Football podcast. With over 20 years covering fantasy football, Vinny gives you an edge that you're not going to get anywhere else. Vinny is a rising star in fantasy football analysis, and you'll want to get on this show now before everybody else does. It's Locked On Fantasy Football on the Locked On Podcast Network. Omar writes in, Kawhi Leonard at the age 22, 12.6 points per game, 37% from three-point range. Justice Winslow at age 22, 12.6 points per game at 37% three-point shooting. Justice would have to average 16.5 points per game this season. And that's the end of the question / statement there. We have a lot. This is our mail, not a mailbag, but just a series of statements that we're reacting to today. But this... Are we back to the Kawhi or no. To the Justice is Kawhi thing? Because also Omar lied. Kawhi averaged 12.8 points per game. on his age 22 season, not 12.6. So Omar, you're wrong. That's where everything falls apart.
Either way, I mean, it's a terrible comparison. Oh, I mean, not a terrible comparison. It's a comparison it's I think we foolish. Don't like to make. It's
just stop getting your hopes up. The worst thing about NBA Twitter, or my least favorite aspect at least, is people trying to like blow your mind with a statistic. It's always like, you know, of players who in their age 23 season who shot left-handed 68% of the time and played at least 14 minutes a night, like Justice Winslow averaged more points than all of them. And it's like, it's
only two players in NBA history, Justice Winslow and Wilt Chamberlain. Exactly. And you're like, what? That's amazing. Yeah,
it's always this like absurd, hyper-specific thing. This isn't that bad, obviously, but like, let's stop thinking that Kawhi Leonard is a realistic comp for Justice Winslow at this point in his career. I mean, we haven't seen it on that level yet. Everyone just needs to pump the brakes. I do think Justice Winslow can be very good. I do think he can be an X factor on a good team, but expecting to make, you know, the Kawhi level leap is so unfair.
What's your favorite comp for Justice?
That's a good one. I was going to ask that. Let's flip Omar's statement around a little bit and say, what's his ideal comp?
I mean, it's obviously not the same player, but I do think you're looking at, you know, a 21st century version of Shane Battier, where it's a guy who can be 3-and-D but also handle the ball. I don't know that he's ever going to become a go-to scorer. I guess Battier is not good because he obviously was never the ball handler that Justice was. I do also think, like, hey, like a very diet version of Ben Simmons makes sense for him too. You put the ball in his hands. And you let him attack from the top of the key. He can do some work on the fast break. He's a big body, so he can, you know, do something when you put a smaller guy on him. So I, as much as, you know, Heat fans kind of have it out for Ben Simmons, you know, if Justice makes it halfway there, that would be very, very good for him. So
he's a better shooter.
You know, definitely. So I think it's something in that mold, but I don't expect him to be a star, but I think he can be a very, you know, important part of a good team.
Luka Doncic?
I mean, Luka's not a bad idea either. Diet Luka's not a bad one either, to be honest.
Curtis writes in, I've heard Bam Adebayo hyped more by Heat fans and NBA Twitter than any other Heat player, including Justice Winslow. Justice took a huge leap last year while Bam remained inconsistent. Do you agree with the Bam hype, and do you project him as a higher upside than Justice? We've talked about this before, Rohan, so I'd love to hear your... like. Ranking Miami's players, I'm going to expand this to all of like the young guys. So Bam, Justice, Tyler, Derek Jones Jr. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody. That group, does Bam have the highest ceiling among that group?
I think he's got the best potential of anyone on the Heat right now. I mean, something that people don't talk enough about Bam is how much versatility he has defensively. I mean, when they were playing the Warriors, for example, Bam was like their best answer to Kevin Durant. I mean, he's that kind of defender. I mean, I think he's someone who can defend four positions one day pretty realistically, which is really important. There's a lot to his game, and that's not a knock on Justice. It's just really about Bam's versatility. I do think getting consistent playing time as a starter, no longer having to compete with Whiteside, is going to help his game a lot. I don't know that he is... again, going to be a superstar type player, but I do think he's going to be very good. The hype is maybe getting a little bit out of hand, but I can see why people are excited, because it feels like we've only scratched the surface with him, and there's been kind of this huge impediment in his way, and now that that's finally gone, it's pretty exciting.
Are you referring to Whiteside as a huge impediment?
Yes, I am referring to Whiteside as a huge impediment.
But not as a rim protector, necessarily. I mean, just more in terms of... I would not be shocked I wouldn't be shocked if Bam almost looked like he was playing more power forward than center this year, especially in lineups with Kelly Olynyk, because Kelly Olynyk is 7 feet tall, and you might end up hiding him on other centers defensively, and then you have Bam, who is so versatile, being able to guard other forwards. Like, Bam Adebayo might end up... when they drafted him, they kept talking about him as a power forward, and I think the idea was more... I don't know if it was just be like, hey, Hassan, he's not a center, he's a power forward, we'll play you guys together, and then they tried that, and it was a disaster. But Kelly Olynyk is a better passer, a better shooter, obviously spaces the floor in a way that Bam Adebayo hasn't. And if you could play them together, I think that they're basically interchangeable in that front court, and I think that's why that works.
Oh, they've always played super well together. I do think that they need to find a way to get those guys on the court together more often. I mean, we all remember when they went, you know, on that big stretch a couple years ago, how well Justice, Jay Rich, Wayne, Kelly, and Bam were playing together. Obviously, that lineup doesn't exist anymore, and ever since they acquired Wade, they went away from it. But I do think there's something about having the trio of Justice, Kelly, and Bam together, and if you get shooters around those guys, I think they can be really successful.
Are you concerned at all about Bam getting cut from USA Basketball? Because I think we addressed this in a recent show as well, that maybe he just didn't show the same kind of aggressiveness that he hasn't shown either in his Heat career. And that's a concern for me, at least, is that, you know, I know that's a very limited training camp and you're looking for something specific, or at least Coach Popovich is looking for something specific. And maybe he just didn't see it from Adebayo. There's not enough time there. Obviously, there's a glut at the center position with Plumlee and Lopez and things of that sort. But do you have any issues with him being cut from the team?
Not really. I mean, obviously, you know, there was some talk about maybe not even being basketball related, but, you know, who knows? That's also a weird situation when you get called in so late. You know, maybe you weren't expecting it. You weren't really, you know, used to your own routine at this point, and now you're doing something that you had absolutely zero expectation that you were going to be doing this summer. So I'm not too worried about it just because of how strange that particular process has been this year. Right. You know, if it was something that he was gearing up for all summer and it had still happened and, you know, more information had come out, then it might be a little more worrisome. But, you know, that is just a weird situation in general right now. You know, some people, I think, you know, De'Aaron Fox dropping out when he did. No. I do think that just the enthusiasm for Team USA has not been there this summer. So I'm not going to hold it against Bam specifically that he got cut.
What did you hear as far as the non-basketball reasons?
I didn't hear anything. I just saw, I believe it was Christian Hernandez from Heatbeat/Five Reasons Sports, whatever monolith they're calling themselves these days, the Death Star. You know, I saw him send a tweet. That was all I saw. Listen, man, I'm in Los Angeles now. I miss half the tweets every day. You know, I'm just going on hikes and drinking smoothies. I don't have time for August NBA Twitter. So it doesn't really concern me that Bam didn't make the team.
I totally relate to that. You wake up and NBA Twitter has already happened. It's hard to adjust to that.
Yeah, it's, you know, I guess there was a big Baker Mayfield story today that I completely missed.
He called out Daniel Jones, the Giants quarterback. He was like, I can't believe they drafted him. And I was like, I have no time to catch up on this.
My buddy wrote that too. Like a good friend of mine at GQ wrote that story. I sent him a text and he said, are you really going to pretend like I didn't have the biggest story in sports today? And I said, was Baker Mayfield you? I was like, shit, okay.
TZA Mac writes in, list of players in NBA history to average 30-plus points, 5-plus rebounds, 7-plus assists, 2-plus steals, and 1-plus blocks per game in their career, Dwayne Wade, or in the season, sorry, Dwayne Wade, the 2008-2009 season. End of list. Now, this was in response to another tweet about who the best player in NBA history is to have never won an MVP award. Is it Dwayne Wade?
You guys really are kind of desperate for August content, huh?
Oh, my gosh. We want to answer as many of these tweets as possible.
D-Wade's body is still warm from being retired, and now we're...
Well, he's got to gear up for the big three soon, apparently. So,
did you move to L.A. for Dwayne Wade?
No, I did not, Wes. Okay, there are two basketball teams here that happen to be pretty popular. All right, I did not move here for Dwayne Wade.
He was popular when you moved there. I mean, I know you finalized the move there.
There's one basketball team that is popular there.
Anyway, I think he's up there. He's got to be up there for best player who's never won an MVP.
He's up there, David. I mean, I'm trying to think.
Scottie Pippen.
Oh, he's better than Scottie Pippen. Come on.
He's
better than Scottie Pippen.
I don't know if you can minimize. Oh, look, I mean, I know.
I'm minimizing Dwayne's anything, but Dwayne Wade's the second greatest shooting guard ever. He's better than Scottie Pippen.
Right.
Scottie Pippen's a good one, but.
Yeah, I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I can't recall any of
this. This will be great radio. Why don't we just Google it? Best players to never win.
Let's stick with D Wade. Let's just say it. Who's going to stop us? Why do we even have to pretend otherwise?
I mean, we're talking about the first hit on Google is Clyde Drexler, Jason Kidd, Patrick Ewing, Isaiah Thomas, Elgin Baylor.
Ewing's a good one.
Ewing's a good one. John Havlicek, I guess, never won one, but whatever.
Yeah, that was different.
Yeah, different. That was different. Yeah, but Dwayne Wade's better than Patrick Ewing. How many rings does Patrick Ewing have?
Oh, come on.
You're going to use a rings argument? I know
Dwayne Wade is better than Patrick Ewing. Come on. Of all time?
I think so, but I'm not ready to say it that confidently as Wes is.
Yeah,
like,
confident.
It's definitely possible, but Wes is coming out the gates in a way that feels a little disrespectful, and I think David would agree.
Yeah, I do agree.
Disrespectful to who?
To Cap? I mean, Ewing's a hell of a player. I mean, he was one of the best centers of all time there. I mean, I think we have to acknowledge that.
Where's this anger coming from, Wes?
This is my life now. It's August. Wes is angry all the time, and he's just struggling for content. And I'm the victim.
Listen, I'm not disrespecting Patrick Ewing or Scottie Pippen or any of these people, but Dwayne Wade on the all-time rankings is definitely over them. And it's not,
you know,
like,
okay, here's another
argument. Some of the top 30 players ever. I think there is no way I'm disrespecting these guys. Dwayne Wade is above them. That's all I'm saying. With the NFL season around the corner, you're not going to want to miss the new look Locked On NFL podcast. With expert analysis from former NFL scout Matt Williamson and host Brian Peacock, Locked On NFL is your daily podcast on all things NFL. Subscribe to Locked On NFL wherever you get podcasts.
I don't think a lot of people would agree with that. And I think a lot of people look at the championships during the Big Three era and say those were due to LeBron. No duh. But and I think I don't know that Dwayne's career is going to age as well as people think it is. Especially Heat fans in particular think it's going to be one of where we're going to look back in 20 years and look at Dwayne Wade and say, oh my God, he was a seminal player. He changed the league, etc. I don't think so. I think he doesn't have the hardware, the individual hardware to reflect that. I think you could say he was great in 2006 and better than Shaquille O'Neal, etc. But at the same time, you could still credit Shaq for helping get the championship that first year. And, of course, LeBron's going to get the credit in 2012 and 13. So
Ewing never won a championship and Scottie Pippen needed Michael Jordan. So, like, the arguments work against them. One thing I will say, because I think we're getting tired of this topic here, but that argument you just said about Dwayne Wade's game not aging well, I have two thoughts on that. And the first one is I think that's my argument for James Harden. There's a lot of people out here saying that James Harden will go down as a better shooting guard or just a better guard or whatever than Dwayne Wade or might already be there or that it's at least an argument. We've talked about that before. I just, like, I'm sorry. I'm being a little hot takey with the rings thing, but until he actually wins something, I don't think he can be in the discussion with Dwayne Wade, and that's just my...
Well, he's won an MVP, Wes.
He's won an MVP, and that's fine, but he can't... Like, he just hasn't won the thing that matters yet, and Dwayne Wade has three of them. So until James Harden does that, I can't put him in there. I'm sorry, that's my... All of it matters. And okay, it's not like Dwayne Wade was some schlump with no stats. I mean, Dwayne Wade's 2008-2009 season was unbelievable, and you could argue he should have won the MVP that year. But
we're talking about individual players, right?
I know.
And, MVP is an individual award.
Yeah. I'm just going to like pull up and grab a sandwich real quick and let you guys hash this out if you don't mind.
That's fine.
Okay.
Get a smoothie. go to Tender Greens. It's great.
I do love the passion here, I got to say. Wes is not making bad points. I don't think he's making...
Wait, can I finish my point, though?
Can I defend you real quick, Wes?
Sure. It's rare. I can't believe this is happening. I feel like this is a trap.
No. All I'll say is Wes is not saying it's all about rings, but that we should also value rings, and I respect that.
Thank you. And that's the thing that James Harden doesn't have, and I think if we just talk about stats, the way the NBA is going, I think that there are going to be... Now, there's not going to be a lot of James Hardens because of his... Now he's got the step-back one... footed three-point shot, apparently, which is unbelievable.
And the team lets him do this to an extent that no one else really wants their players to do something like this.
And we're just keep seeing these stats get more and more inflated as the pace of the game increases. I think like 20 years from now, I think people will actually appreciate Dwayne Wade more, and rings might even be more of a barometer for how good a player was or how significant that player was in the history of the game than just the raw stats, because we're sort of in this steroid ball version of basketball. And I think we're going to look back on it and just be like, okay, those stats were great by James Harden, but Zaire Wade just put up the same stats and isn't nearly the same player. You know what I mean? Just like based on the evolution of the game or whatever it might be. I just think that's not
how history works, though. I mean, and unfortunately, I get your point. Maybe it should.
Does it not, though? Because we kind of look...
No,
we look
it's
at
the same
Wilt's
reason
numbers.
Why we discount Jerry West. You know,
Jerry
the pace was slower. You know, he didn't have the three-point shot. We don't take those things into consideration. We'd look at his points per game averages and say, no, that's pretty bad. He only faced seven other teams, et cetera. I mean, there are many arguments for players in NBA history and why we discount them. And again, I think as time goes on, you're going to look at Dwayne Wade's categories, his statistical output, and you're going to reduce that. And you're not going to look in context. Context is the one thing that's missing as far as historical arguments.
And I'm saying I think context is going to matter more because the stats are going to be so rapidly inflated. My other thought here about Dwayne Wade, and I was thinking about this because I was just because it's August and I was just looking at Dwayne Wade YouTube videos because that's what I do in my spare time.
Well, there you go.
I think that the underrated aspect of his game was his passing, and I hope that we can at least remember that. I think he was a next-level passer, and we don't talk about that enough. When we talk about Dwayne Wade, Rohan, your thoughts?
I don't disagree.
Harden better.
Okay, but let's also talk about defense. If we're going to talk about the Wade-Harden thing and we're really going to get into these waters. I mean, Wade's defense in 08-09 was remarkable. If you go back and watch that Heat Bulls game that everyone, you know, has etched into their memories at this point, he is like fourth quarter, 2 minutes left. He is their rim defender, not just the guy expected to score every basket on offense. And I do think that is a part of his game that's going to age really well. And that is a part of his game that I think we'll appreciate more as we're able to kind of measure the defensive impact players of more over time. I do think, you know, Wade's going to get a huge bump there because for years he was one of the best defenders at his position. You know, if you think about it, David, like, the way Kobe was lionized, and obviously, you know, people, you know, he sparks debate, but, you know, Kobe was a guy making all defensive teams at a time where it was going way more off reputation than kind of statistics and a better understanding of defense. And I do think that is something that is also going to help Dwayne's game age a lot over the years because he was a spectacular defender for a long time.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned, you know, why we lionize Bryant, but at the same time, I'm starting to see a lot of people recently kind of reflect back on Dwayne Wade's career and call him dirty. And I don't know that we would go that far. I mean, I think maybe he's taken a cheap shot or two here and there, but I see a lot of people kind of question how dirty he is, not just Bill Simmons, but others too.
Who is dirtier, him or Kelly Olynyk?
Maybe Dwayne Wade, I hate to say it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Dwayne is.
Dwayne Wade wasn't dirty as much as he was like,
opportunistic
is a good way to put it.
I don't have a problem with dirty anyway. Dirty is whatever. I think it is opportunistic. Let's just call it opportunistic. If we just call dirty opportunistic, I think it would have less of a stigma. I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. Maybe that's because I'm a dirty pickup player.
Bringing out all the takes on this lovely August day, Wes.
Marquez writes in, are the Heat able to use the two-way contracts even though they are hard capped? The answer is yes. I reached out to somebody who knows these things, not a problem. Do we have any idea of who the Heat's two-way guys could be? That's a tough question. What positions that they should assign the two-way contracts to? Because they've actually used these guys in rotation spots during the season in the past couple of years while they've had these available to them.
Yeah, I don't think they've necessarily looked by position, though. I think in the past they've always just seen a guy who has the most upside or who works hardest or who kind of fits the Heat model best.
They haven't given it to a center.
I guess you're right. I guess that's a good point.
I don't know if that's because they just had so many centers or because they just didn't see one who they wanted to have on a two-way contract, but they have found it's typically been wings. No point guards, no centers. It's been wings. It's been Duncan Robinson, Derrick Jones Jr.
Can you tell me the name of the person who asked this question?
Marquez.
Okay, I want to say something to Marquez real quick. Marquez, it is August. It's peak tomato season, okay? It's probably warm where you live. If you're thinking right now about what the Heat can do with their two-way contracts, you're in too deep, my man, okay? This is my literal job, and I've never even thought for a second since the free agency crush ended, Heat should do with their two-way contracts. They're going to be okay, all right? They're going to be fine. The team is going to be good. Don't worry about the two-way guys just yet, okay? Maybe they'll get someone. Maybe they'll find another diamond in the rough. But maybe wait until the opening of training camp before you start concerning yourself with something like two-way contracts, okay? Right now, I just encourage you, take a deep breath. Take solace in the fact that it's a great organization with a great coach and a good front office willing to take risks. Players still want to play here. The team is going to be fine. But you don't need to worry about two-way players in the middle of August.
Wow.
I'll say this.
Tomato season. I didn't even realize that was a thing.
of course, Rohan knows this, and I was wondering, I sat down in a restaurant the other day, and they were like, here's our, speaking of California, Ron, here's our heirloom tomato menu. It was a whole menu of heirloom tomato products and dishes. I was like, why do we have this here?
I was like, Wes, you missed out if you didn't order an heirloom tomato dish. This is the time to do it, my friend.
I feel like I really missed an opportunity here. I just sort of set it aside. I was like, why would I do this? I don't know. I ordered the cheeseburger.
No, now is a very good time to eat an heirloom tomato. I had a BLT today, and it was delicious.
Well, speaking of your BLT, that brings us to our next question. Do you eat your BLT or sandwiches with the toothpick still in them?
Really? No, I always take the toothpick out.
I think we all agree here. The reason I bring this up, I saw
it's
this happen.
It's August. I think that's the biggest reason.
Mostly because it's August. Secondly, actually, I may have brought this up even in the middle of the season because this stuff really bothers me. If you are sitting at a restaurant and you order a cheeseburger or a sandwich of any kind and it comes with a toothpick in it, I want you to understand, if you're listening to this program and you are one of the people that eats it with the toothpick still in it, I want you to understand that is for presentation purposes. And it's probably for the server so that the bun doesn't slide off the patty when they're bringing it out to the table. Take the toothpick out. Number one, it's very dangerous. I think that's self-explanatory. Number two, it doesn't belong in the sandwich. And if you can't hold the sandwich together, I don't care how big the sandwich is. If it's too big, cut it in half, take it apart, but take the damn toothpick out of it. You look like an insane person if you eat it with a toothpick in there. I put a poll out on Twitter, and I was surprised. It was like 18% of people said they still eat it with a toothpick in it. That's an insane amount of people, 18%.
I've never not had the toothpick in, but that's mostly out of gluttony. It's like I'm just so hungry right now that I don't even care that I might, you know, like literally stab myself in the mouth, that sometimes I'll take a couple bites and then take the toothpick out. But there's no reason to keep that thing in there. Get a firm grip on both sides of that sandwich, and you don't need a toothpick.
Do people eat? I wonder if people eat around the toothpick. Like, did you know how you eat a sandwich from one side to the other? Do you just?
Yes. I have done that, and it was years ago. I think I was a kid.
Did you lose a bet? Oh, okay.
No. I think I was a kid, and it was just like came in the middle of the hamburger or something, and I ate around it.
You don't sound happy with yourself.
No, I'm ashamed to have admitted it on this podcast. I don't know. I mean, one, that I ate meat, and two, that I ate with a toothpick in the sandwich.
There you go. All
right. Oh, God. I forgot about the meat eating.
Yeah. While you guys are waxing poetic about heirloom tomatoes, all I'm thinking about is a Popeye's chicken sandwich.
Oh, man.
You're skipping way ahead.
I got to go get one. Yeah. Way ahead? Oh, no. How many more food questions do we have?
Well, we'll have more food questions for part two of our mailbag with Rohan Nadkarni on Friday, but that'll be it for us today. You can connect with us on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email us at lockedonheat@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Yeah!